WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
On Friday, the Supreme Court delivered a huge win for President Trump, which leaves us with one question right now. What could this decision mean for the future of birthright citizenship? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The 6-3 decision, split along ideological lines, limits the ability of federal judges to put nationwide freezes on the president's executive orders. And Trump was quick to declare victory.
Thanks to this decision, we can now properly file to proceed with these numerous policies and those that have been wrongly enjoined on a nationwide basis, including birthright citizenship, ending sanctuary city funding, suspending refugee resettlement, freezing unnecessary funding, stopping federal taxpayers from paying for transgender surgeries, and numerous other priorities of the American people.
That's certainly a wide range of promises from the president. So, to get a recap and talk about what we can expect now, I spoke to Immigrants' Rights Clinic Director and Clinical Law Professor Nicole Hallett and UIC Law Professor Stephen Schwinn. Professor Schwinn started with some basics.
So if I could, let's just back up a little bit and talk about what this universal injunction is and kind of define it for our listeners.
Sure.
Ordinarily, when a person sues the government because the government has done something against the person, the relief that person seeks is individual to the person. What happens with these universal injunctions is that a person is suing the government for a government action, in this case, Trump's executive order on birthright citizenship, and asking for an injunction that applies not only to the person, but applies nationwide, which means then that the Trump administration can't enforce its ban on birthright citizenship, not only to the person who sued, but to anybody across the nation. Now, this idea of universal injunctions has long been controversial, but the Supreme Court has kind of let universal injunctions go forward in the Obama administration, the first Trump, the Biden administration, and now the second Trump
administration. And Biden and Obama were against it. They took issue with it.
Oh, they were.
With nationwide injunctions.
Absolutely. And the Biden administration asked the Supreme Court twice to consider universal injunctions that were issued against Biden administration initiatives, and the Supreme Court declined. Well, in this case, the Supreme Court took up this issue of universal injunctions in the context of birthright citizenship. And I want to be clear for listeners, the case was not about birthright citizenship, at least on its face. The case was about these universal injunctions. And what Justice Amy Coney Barrett wrote for the court for a 6-justice majority, and again, this aligned along conventional ideological lines, was that lower federal courts don't have jurisdiction to issue universal injunctions. This was not part of our country's history and tradition, looking at what we call a kind of originalist approach to the Constitution. And because we didn't have this in our history and tradition, lower federal courts can't do it today. That this would empower lower federal courts at the expense of the government, in this case, at the expense of the executive branch, and that federal courts just can't do that.
Yeah. What's being talked about a lot, too, is that this ruling seems to strengthen presidential power.
Absolutely, it does. Yes, this is a power suck from the judiciary to the executive branch. There's no question about it, Sasha. What's going on here is that the court has now invited the executive to issue executive orders and take executive actions that are flatly illegal and flatly unconstitutional, like the birthright citizenship issue, and dodge judicial review and effectively not get judicial review so that the courts can't rein the administration in on its illegal behavior.
Professor Hallett, let's bring you in here. In her dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, she said, quote, "No right is safe in the new legal regime the court creates." Considering the nature of the current administration, what's your reaction?
I think Justice Sotomayor is exactly right. I do think this is a major rebalancing of power from the judiciary to the executive branch. And it's a rebalancing of power at a point in which the executive branch is trying to take more and more power for itself. I expect that we will see more executive orders with dubious legality mm-hmm. be issued. And I think that the problem with the courts not having this power of universal injunctions is that I could go to court and get a court order protecting my right, but I won't be able to get a court order that protects anybody else's right. We don't want to have 350 million people file lawsuits in order to protect our rights. If the government is doing something illegal, courts should be able to stop that. And this really hampers courts' ability. It doesn't in individual cases, but it really does mean that in many of these situations, most of these policies will go into effect, except against maybe a small number of people, until the Supreme Court yeah. weighs in. And that might be years down the road. And in the meantime, the unlawful policy is in place.
And we've seen nationwide injunctions really stop or stall President Trump's immigration policy so far, haven't we?
Yes. I mean, immigration policy is a perfect example. You know, immigration policy is national. This is not a situation in which one individual has a unique claim. When the government issues an executive policy, that's going to apply across the country, and it's going to apply to a broad number of people. And again, when you're talking about non-citizens in particular, you're talking about a group of people who often don't have the resources to hire legal counsel, may not be familiar with the legal system, and don't know what their rights are. And so we have a very vulnerable population of people who I think even more than normal will not be able to access their rights if they're not protected by these universal injunctions.
Professor Schwinn, how do you anticipate that the president's immigration and deportation policy will change in light of this ruling?
Well, I expect that the president is going to start to enforce its birthright citizenship ban to the extent that it can. Now, Sasha, I do want to be clear to listeners. We've got a 30-day window here
yeah.
where the Supreme Court has said, we're not going to let this go into effect for 30 days to allow the states and class actions to proceed.
We're probably at 27 now.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But states are already moving to show that they ought to get universal relief in these cases. And for listeners, states have sued in addition to individual plaintiffs. And if states can get relief, I think it's pretty likely that they can probably get universal relief. Class actions have already been sued against the federal policy, the birthright citizenship policy.
Okay.
And the court specifically said that class actions could go forward if they meet the class action requirements. That's a big if, but if they do, then they could get class-wide relief that way.
What about cities? Could he use executive orders to go after sanctuary cities like ours?
It's quite possible. And for a number of other policies that the Trump administration, where the courts have held up the Trump administration using these universal injunctions, including its attempt to defund sanctuary cities, if the Trump administration decides that it wants to sidestep judicial review, as it has with birthright citizenship, all it has to do is kind of go on a case-by-case basis to attack sanctuary cities or any of the other policies that we heard President Trump mention in the opening segment.
So, Professor Hallett, Professor Schwinn brings up a good point here. We've got a 30-day window that we're working with when it comes to this ruling. But if it's not challenged, it is going to create this patchwork where you've got birthright citizenship being a right in 22 states, ours, Illinois being one of them, and then other states where you can't have birthright citizenship. So what could that look like in practice?
Well, I agree with Steve that I think it's very possible that we will still see this policy enjoined on a nationwide basis, just under different kinds yeah. of reasoning. But I think if the policy is allowed to go into effect in the states that have not sued to stop the policy, I expect there to be mass chaos and confusion. We will see a statelessness epidemic. So there are many babies born in the United States who might not have other citizenship. And if they aren't given the right to U.S. citizenship, at least right now, they may be stateless. I think we'll see children who are entitled to birthright citizenship being deported because the government argues that they have no legal immigration status and are not U.S. citizens. I think it'll be very confusing when people cross state lines. Are you a citizen when you're in Illinois, but then when you travel to Texas, you suddenly will lose your citizenship. I think it's going to create huge problems, not to mention the fact that our immigration laws are written assuming that if you are in the United States, you are a citizen. We don't have laws that are intended to address this situation. So I'll just give you one example. The executive order claims that if you are a child born right now to people with visas, non-immigrant visas, you will not have citizenship, right? But you will also not have a visa. So you could have two immigrants legally in the United States on a temporary visa who have a child who essentially is born undocumented. We just simply don't have the processes set up to handle these kinds of situations because for over 100 years, it's been assumed that undocumented immigrants can, if they have children in the United States, those children will be U.S. citizens.
Oh, that would be brand new.
Yes, it would very much be brand new. I think it would require a total rewriting of our immigration laws. And if that doesn't happen, again, I think it's going to be chaos, confusion. I think people will be harmed, even if eventually the Supreme Court says that this policy is unconstitutional. Yeah.
So are there legal avenues then available to these immigrant families in a situation like the one that you just described?
Well, they can go to court. We've seen a massive increase in litigation since the Trump administration came into office. And I think what this opinion is going to do is going to open the floodgates to even more litigation because a family in Texas who wants to establish that their recently born child is a U.S. citizen is potentially, if we don't get a nationwide order, is going to have to go to court individually and make that argument. Again, there are not enough lawyers to do that, and people don't have money to pay private lawyers. So I'm a public interest lawyer. I don't charge my clients any money, but you know, most lawyers need to make money, and they're not going to be able to take hundreds and thousands of these cases when people can't afford to pay for legal services.
So help us understand, Professor Schwinn, what is the basic argument that President Trump and his allies are making against birthright citizenship? What's their issue?
So this go back to the language of the 14th Amendment. Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says that individuals who are born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereto are citizens of the United States. A federal statute mirrors that language. So we have both statutory and constitutional protections for birthright citizenship. What the Trump team has latched on to is that phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereto. What they've claimed is that individuals who are born in the United States are citizens of the United States, but only to the extent that they're subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And what they're claiming is that if their parents are not United States citizens, they're not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, and therefore don't enjoy birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment. Now, as Nicole mentioned a moment ago, the Supreme Court has for over 100 years rejected that interpretation. And we as a people have rejected that interpretation time and time again. And yet this argument persists, and the Trump administration has really picked up on it and run with it.
Yeah. I remember having you on the program months ago when this executive order, you know, was first written and asking you, frankly, can he do that? And my mind is still blown that months later we're here sitting down and we're talking about this having moved forward.
We're still having this conversation, right? The can he do that question is huge. My students ask me that all the time. How is he doing this and a number of other things? You mentioned sanctuary cities. Does the president have unilateral authority to defund sanctuary cities? Well, not under current law. So how is he doing it? Well, he's doing it.
Yeah. And Professor Hallett, is he looking, just so we're clear, to retroactively revoke citizenship?
The executive order does not do it retroactively.
Okay.
It purports to deny citizenship documents to babies born after a certain date. But the executive order makes the argument that individuals born to undocumented immigrants or to temporary visa holders have never enjoyed birthright citizenship, and they're going to start enforcing it moving forward.
Yeah.
But if the court concludes that that is a correct interpretation of the 14th Amendment, there is nothing that would prevent the administration from starting to implement it retroactively. And in fact, you could imagine a situation in which people are having to go back generations in order to prove that they are citizens of the United States.
Right.
If that interpretation is allowed to stand, no one's citizenship is safe. And I expect that at the very least, they'll start to try to strip citizenship to people that they consider in certain categories, such as people who have been convicted of certain crimes. So this is a very, very dangerous issue. And, you know, we kind of can think about it as only affecting one group of people. But in fact, if it is allowed to go forward, it will affect all of us.
Yeah. Wow. Can we expect, Professor Schwinn, a case to make its way to the Supreme Court that is more, even more directly about the constitutionality of birthright citizenship? Because as you said earlier, this case actually was not about this issue. But of course, the impact is, it's a ripple effect here.
It's a ripple effect, and it's a fantastic question. In some ways, that's a central question to all of what's going on. Let me explain. So far, we have three different district court judges appointed by different presidents of different parties saying that this position on birthright citizenship is blatantly unconstitutional, and literally using that language, blatantly mm-hmm. unconstitutional. Now, what the Supreme Court would do with this, we really don't know. But here's the problem. If these cases continue to rule that Trump's position on birthright citizenship is blatantly unconstitutional, all the Trump administration has to do to evade Supreme Court review on the question is decline to appeal those cases. In other words, the Trump administration itself has the power to keep this issue away from the Supreme Court so that it would not get a nationwide adverse ruling on its position with regard to birthright citizenship. Now, it might lose the individual cases along the way, but the administration would say, well, so what? We'll just move on to the next case and enforce it in a different case, evading Supreme Court review.
Yeah. Wow, so much to discuss here. Thank you for breaking that down for us. That's Stephen Schwinn, who's a professor of law at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and Nicole Hallett, who's a clinical professor of law and the director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School. Great to have you both on.
Thanks so much, Sasha.
Thank you.
We'll turn now to how the SCOTUS ruling could impact Chicago's immigrant communities. I sat down with Susana Sandoval Vargas. She's the Midwest Regional Counsel for the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, or MALDEF, and Luciano Pedota, who's the co-founder of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance. We'll also hear from Democratic Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia, who represents Illinois' 4th Congressional District. I started by asking the panel about their initial reactions after hearing this court ruling. Susana went first.
There's this immediate thought of the balance of power and what it's going to look like moving forward. But what I would like to reiterate for our listeners here is that the issue of birthright citizenship on the merits was not decided by the Supreme Court. What was decided was specifically on the injunction and nationwide injunction specifically, and how federal courts, what kind of power they have of issuing nationwide injunctions.
Yeah. Luciano?
Yeah, in our case for the Venezuelan community is yet another challenge that we have, you know, to
sort
face.
Of a here we go again.
Here we go again. You know, we have the challenge of the TPS. We have 600,000 Venezuelans who have requested TPS, who are under TPS status. And so now we have this new, issue with President Trump wanting to basically say that if your kids are born here, then they're not American citizens. And what that means for the Venezuelan community is that, we don't have any embassies or consulates here in the United States. So if you're born here and the United States does not want to grant you citizenship,
where do you go?
What that means, you're stateless, right? Where do you go? If you don't have a birth certificate, basically you can't do any administrative task, right? Whether it's to register in schools, to, register at the healthcare hospital. So it's very challenging. And so we're kind of in standby and seeing how things unfold. Just a lot of uncertainty for our community.
Yeah. Have you had any insight into how people are feeling? Have people called, asked questions?
Yes. People are very anxious. They're already very anxious about the TPS because, a lot of them have lost their TPS and because that's being battled in the courts. So they're kind of on standby. But there's a lot of people who actually, their lives carry on. They're working. They're married. They're having kids. They might be having kids in the next 3, 5, 6 months, right? And so they don't know if they're gonna have a kid with a birth certificate, a legal nationality,
or not. Yeah, Susana, MALDEF is a nationwide organization. So how are you folks addressing this ruling? What's step one for you?
Right. Well, as Luciana just mentioned, there is a lot of confusion, a lot of concern. We have received calls asking what this decision means. Does this mean birthright citizenship is over? And so the first step is explaining and helping people understand what this decision actually was, because mm-hmm. there is just a lot of confusion about the decision generally. And then the next step is to continue to monitor. As our other colleagues were mentioning, we still believe that there is a way to reach a nationwide injunction. It's just going to look a little different. There's already been several class action lawsuits filed trying to certify a class. Mm-hmm. So there is still a way to possibly get there. And so we continue to monitor this. And if we feel that there is a need to intervene and file a lawsuit, that's something that we will continue to consider.
Yeah, I want to make sure everybody's on the same page here. So the Supreme Court, as we've been talking about, this ruling left a lot in limbo for immigrant people, parents specifically, as mm-hmm. Luciana was pointing out, parents who may be about to have a baby and they're wondering if the child is going to be considered a citizen or not. What are some of the rights that immigrants still intrinsically have despite Friday's ruling?
Right. So in the United States, everybody has rights regardless of your immigration status. And there is a number of civil rights that everybody has. But birthright citizenship is guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And no president has the authority to unilaterally alter the Constitution. What the executive order seeks to do is undermine well-established interpretation of the Supreme Court's rights under the 14th Amendment. And if the executive order were to be implemented, it would lead to a lot of chaos and confusion.
Yeah. And the main recourse, Luciano, that immigrants have for Friday's ruling is filing a lawsuit, right? In court. We know, though, that a lot of immigrants, they don't have the resources to do that. There's a cost barrier sometimes, a language barrier. So what's your advice to folks trying to navigate something like that?
Well, I mean, we're lucky to be in a state of Illinois, right, in a city like Chicago that has a lot of groups that represent and defend the rights of immigrants. So we rely basically on these groups to assist the community, and that's what the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance does. We partner with organizations like the Resurrection Project to help us navigate. You know, they're a Mexican-American community with a long history in immigration mm-hmm. and providing housing for immigrants. And so we depend on them to yeah. assist us and navigate the system and understand the complexities. I mean, you just had two lawyers here before us. And, you know, it's even they struggle to understand what the possibilities are.
It's a lot. There's a lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts.
At the same time.
So we're kind of in the middle, just kind of waiting and listening and welcoming any advice that we can get.
You heard my conversation earlier, as you mentioned, Luciana, with the lawyers. I'm curious if this ruling, if it does have any impact on Chicago's sanctuary city status, how are you going to prepare for that? Luciano?
Well, that's a good question. This is unprecedented, right? As I understand it, I think especially with the Venezuelan community, we're very new mm-hmm. to Chicago. There's Venezuelans started arriving here, you know, around 2017, 18, very, very, you know, in small numbers. And then it wasn't until 2022 that actually the big wave of Venezuelans came. So, you know, what we're recommending our community is to be informed, right? And mm-hmm. to be careful where they get their information. And we as an institution, Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance, we try to be connected with the people who really can guide us and then disseminate the information, right?
Yeah.
But as I mentioned before, this is unprecedented for you, Americans who have been here a long time, right? And it's very new for us, so.
Yeah. Susanna, preparation, what does that look like?
Yes. So here in Illinois, we have an amazing community of immigrant advocates that are constantly monitoring, observing, and making sure that all of our communities feel safe and welcome in Chicago and throughout the state of Illinois. So as Luciano mentioned, one of the most important things is keeping our communities informed, helping them understand as things develop, and making sure that we stop the spread of any misinformation. because the more misinformation that is out there, the more chaos and confusion and fear that will be among our communities. So we just continue to take this one step at a time, continue to defend our rights in court. And we already have three federal judges who said this is blatantly unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. Are there other possible anti-immigrant rulings or legislations that your organizations are preparing for? Because, I mean, it's been so much already. Are you thinking other extremes could potentially come down from the high court?
It's always a possibility. So we continue, again, to take it one day at a time. There's also other legislation that we're monitoring throughout the Midwest, mm-hmm. you know, that are potentially challenging cases like Plyler v. Doe. So we want to make sure that all of
tell us more about that case.
Yes, of course. So Plyler v. Doe is a Supreme Court decision where the court determined that all students have a right to public education, K through 12.
Yes.
Grade. And so that is an important right that there's been legislation in different states where they have tried to request either the immigration status of children in order to receive a public education, or condition it on, you know, having to pay for that public education, and that would go against this precedent.
Yeah. Well, let's move to the phones right now. We've got Democratic Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia joining us now. He represents, of course, Illinois' 4th Congressional District. Hi, Representative. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Glad to join you.
So, you know, we are talking about Friday's Supreme Court rulings, as you know, and we're talking with a couple of immigration advocates here in studio, as there's a lot of attacks happening right now on our immigrant communities. So I'm curious how you are working to protect the constitutional right to the topic of the hour, birthright citizenship.
Well, it's pretty clear that the executive order seeks to do something that is illegal. The 14th Amendment has been a case law, settled case law, for over 127 years this year. What Trump and his advisors are trying to do, namely Stephen Miller, is creating a permanent underclass of immigrants, people who live, work, and raise families here, but are denied legal rights, services, and dignity. The Supreme Court, in my opinion, failed us in their ruling because it guts the ability of federal courts to stop illegal policy, and it opens the door to unchecked presidential abuse. So there's a whole lot riding on it. I am confident that when the issue of birthright citizenship goes before the court again, that we will have clarity. But in the meantime, it puts people in terrible situations, especially people whose children could be born in red states where governors and legislatures are and attorneys general are willing to abide by every wish that Trump has. So it creates a precarious situation and adds to the chaos and confusion across the country.
Right. As you said, it opens the door to unchecked presidential abuse, because, in fact, this ruling strengthens the president's power, Congressman. So what are the discussions that you're having with colleagues right now about maintaining the balance of power throughout the three branches of government?
Well, we're going to continue to press our colleagues on the other side of the aisle to abide by constitutional rule, by the rule of law, and continue to make the moral arguments that all of the persecution, because it's very clear that that's what this is all about, is immoral. It's against our economic interest. It's against what's been one of the bulwarks of our immigration system in this country. But remember that all of this has occurred because of Congress's failure to enact immigration reform. Next year will be 40 years since immigration reform had been signed into law, passed by Congress and signed into law by a president. Imagine how much the world, how much our economy, how much the region, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico have changed over that period of time. All the technological advances, yet we have failed to modernize our immigration laws and to have a system that is humane and orderly.
In Illinois, some undocumented adults, they can enroll in Medicaid. Now, earlier this month, we saw Health and Human Services hand the personal information of thousands of immigrant enrollees over to the Department of Homeland Security. What's the effect that that could have?
It's going to make Illinois more unhealthy, sicker, and it's going to cost the providers more when people turn up with more complicated situations in emergency rooms at hospitals and clinics. This is a backward slide. It isn't good for anyone. It will also make people who are legal permanent residents and U.S. citizens more hesitant to look after their health care and their well-being. Mm-hmm. Attacking the health care of communities is one of the most cruel ways to try to drive people into the shadows of our country. And let's not forget that with the reconciliation bill, what we call the big ugly bill in Congress, 17 million people will lose their health care by 2034, while we pour billions into Trump's mass deportation machine, over $160 billion for apprehension, for mass detention and removal of people across the country, as well as resuming the construction of a border wall and, of course, other investments in surveillance and other technology as well.
Well, Congressman, before I let you go, I mean, right now the Senate's debating amendments to the tax and spending bill that would leave nearly 12 million Americans without health insurance by 2034. And it would add at least $3.3 trillion to the national debt over the next 10 years. So what are you keeping an eye on as this is debated? And, you know, looking ahead, once it leaves the Senate, it's going to come to the House. Do you think it'll pass?
Well, we will see if Republicans grow a spine. It's unfortunate that it took a Trump threat of a U.S. Senator, Senator Tillis, a threat to primary him, to run him out of office, to get him to speak the truth on the Senate floor. And that is a testament to what's really happening in our country and the cowardice of our colleagues on the other side to stand up for facts, for science, for the truth, and for constitutional rule. That is what is making our country slide backwards. This is how democracies begin to get extinguished, and it's so important for legislators to stand up for the rule of law, for good tradition. It's the only way we're going to get back on the ability to have bipartisan dialogue and action and compromise legislatively in the U.S. Congress. This is a very perilous time for our country. Trump aims to change our country for generations to come and to cement his power, and most of all by giving billionaires tax cuts when people are having a hard time making ends meet and just providing food and health care for their loved ones.
Yeah. That's Congressman Chuy Garcia. Thank you so much for checking in with us.
Thank you.
You both just heard the congressman there. You know, he said a lot of things. He said the Supreme Court failed us. He said, you know, some of these policies that we've been seeing come down over the last several months are going to make Illinoisans sicker and cost providers more. Both of you nodding as he was speaking. Tell me some of your reactions to what the congressman had to say. Luciano?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, you know, because he's describing everything that makes America great, right? America exceptionalism has to do with a lot of things, right? With their economy, their education, university institutions. It has to do with also the ability to welcome immigrants who are able to become citizens and work. And, you know, immigrants always come with a lot of energy and a lot of determination to you know, find a pathway to live in a better country and improve their livelihoods. So, you know, Venezuelans that are coming here now are starting to question that. And, you know, is it possible? Is it going to be possible for me to really make a better life here?
Yeah.
You know, he described...
That's interesting. While being one of the fastest growing communities here in our region, Venezuelans.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
So much uncertainty.
Yeah. And so Senator Charlie Chuy Garcia mentioned that, you know, Trump is creating an underclass here, right? Well, it turns out that a lot of the Venezuelans that are coming here, they're an underclass in Venezuela because they don't have access to education. They don't have access to health. They don't have the ability to work and make a decent living. And that's the reason they come here. And they come here by foot, right? And they cross the jungle of El Darién in Panama. And they cross all the Central American countries. And they make it here to the United States. You know, you have to be in a very dire situation to do something like that. Yeah. And I've known of women who have done that pregnant, right, with their husbands.
Wow.
And they've come here because they want to, like every immigrant in the past, they want to make a better living, right?
Yet right now it doesn't seem like it might be a better living here in this country. Susanna, what came to mind for you? And I wonder if you're hearing about concern with all that's going on, that, you know, ICE will target and maybe, you know, wrongly detain legal citizen children after this ruling.
Yeah, I agree with Congressman Garcia that this administration has created a sense of fear in our communities. They're scared to take their children to school. They're scared to leave their children at school. Children should feel safe at school. They're scared to access services that they have access to because they don't know what going into these agencies might mean. It might mean the separation of their family. It might mean detention. We unfortunately have seen the detention of United States citizens already. And so I understand this fear, and this fear unfortunately continues to grow among our communities.
We'll leave it there for now. That's Susanna Sandoval Vargas, the Midwest Regional Council for the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, or MALDEF, and Luciano Pedota, who's co-founder of the Illinois-Venezuelan Alliance. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
This episode of the podcast was produced by our amazing Reset team, Gina Montagna, Aryan Kumar, Linnea Dominic, and Meha Ahmed. It was also edited by Meha and mixed by Micah Yasin. These important conversations we bring you daily are certainly a team effort. It's also our priority to keep you informed and connected. By subscribing to the podcast or visiting us at wbez.org/reset, you can make sure that you never miss a conversation. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.